So great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as I visit about a lake, a special lake, Lake Mendota. And maybe we'll talk about some other lakes as well, but the emphasis will be on Lake Mendota because Don Sanford is the author of the book On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota. And if you were ever a student at the University of Wisconsin or if you ever visited Madison, Wisconsin, you no doubt saw the lake and maybe spent some time on it. And Don's put together a heck of a book about many, many, many of the things that have transpired on the lake. I'm really pleased to have him with us today. Don, thanks so much.
Well, Larry, it's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have questions, or maybe you have a Lake Mendota experience, or maybe one on another lake. What's your favorite lake in Wisconsin? But if you've got a good one about Lake Mendota, I'd love that, too. At 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And man, this is how many pages?
It's 350, give or take, which is a lot more than when I first started writing it, thinking about I was going to write this thing. I was thinking maybe this at first I thought it was going to be a little spiral-bound booklet, and then I got on the slippery slope, and the next thing you know, I just kept going, and there's so much more that I discovered while I was researching it than I first thought I knew.
Well, it's just packed, and you call it a social history, and explain that.
Well, social history, and I didn't really know what I was writing when I first started out, and I was talking to a real historian friend of mine, and I said, I'm writing this book, and it's going to be stories about people and the things that people did, and he or she said, oh, you mean you're writing a social history? And I said, I guess so, whatever you say. So it's the story of people, and a lot of it is the story of people in their own words. And I like to say that, if you've taken a walking tour of some neighborhood where you walk down a street and the docent says, well, this building was built in, so-and-so.
Whatever.
And such-and-such. And so this is the same thing. You put yourself in a boat and you go around the lake and you look at the lake shore and I don't talk about really who lives where now. It's about why is this called that, and what was here if you'd been here 50 or 100 years ago. Sometimes it's about who drowned in that spot where we're just floating over. But it's about people's interactions with the lake and what happened here.
That's just fascinating stories.
And a lot of lakes have this storied history of lifestyles of the rich and famous. And there weren't that many rich and famous people who lived on Lake Mendota. And even if there were, this is a story of kind of ordinary people, people who, caught a big fish one day or were sailors or ice fishermen or business people or just all kinds
military
of people.
People. You've even got a story about a park that was kind of set aside during World War II.
That was Warner Park, yeah. Warner Park, the city had just bought that in the mid to late 30s, and it hadn't really been developed. And Colonel Jackson, got this idea that there are all these, he was looking at this big stretch of open land. He knew that there were all these military personnel stationed at Truex, and there was no recreational facility. There's no swimming pool out there for these guys and the women who were there. And they decided that this is where Madison could contribute, and they developed a beach over there and a recreational facility and taught people how to swim. A lot of these people didn't know how to swim, so they taught at swimming, and it was an R&R facility, and that went on all the way through the war. And after the war, it was turned back into the civilian beach, but that was a place where all kinds of people from all over the country came to get on the water.
Yeah, amazing. When I was a student, back in that day, everybody, as a freshman, you had to take a physical education class, and one of the things you had to do was demonstrate that you knew how to swim.
Okay.
Because you lived, we lived right on, you know, the
Lake Sherman
campus is right on right on the lake.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing that I could remember in the old red gym and very cold water.
Very cold water, and it was a interesting pool. I swam there when I first came to Madison, and that was a very interesting pool.
Oh, man. Don Sanford, our guest, author of On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota, having a lot of fun talking with him. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. I'm going to get to Chris from Madison in just a minute, but Chris, hold on there. But I wanted to get back to Fourth Lake. Why, you know, why the name Fourth Lake? Somebody's asking.
I think this was a common convention with surveyors back in the old days. But when these surveyors came through here in the early 1800s, they started at the Prime Meridian down in Illinois someplace and worked their way north, and they came upon this lake, which was turned out to be later on Kigansa, but they found this lake, and then as they worked further north, they discovered that was connected to another one and another one and another one. And so they did not use the Native American names, even if they knew what they were. They didn't use those. The convention was, if you found a bunch of lakes connected together, they were in a chain, and you had First Lake, Second Lake, Third Lake, Fourth Lake. There's a chain like that in New York State. There's a couple of other chains. And so that those the names that the white people, surveyors, gave the lakes stuck until the 1870s, I think, when they were changed to the current names. But it was just a convention, just the way things were done then. And so Mendota, even though it's the first lake in the chain as the water flows, it was the fourth lake these
the
surveyors
direction.
Found in the other direction. They came the other way.
Chris in Madison, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I'm just calling to share that I met a friend on the East Coast who's become a dear friend. She grew up in Madison, and she was one of the first women back in the 60s with two friends. She was in high school to swim across Lake Mendota, and they made the newspaper. And it's just such a small world that I now end up living in Madison. And I actually live on Lake Monona, and right now the ice has frozen so quickly that it is sending shockwaves through the house. It did it three times yesterday and two times the day before. So my question would be, given the increased size of Lake Mendota, does that happen on Lake Mendota as well?
Oh, yes. And I had a friend of mine, he lives on the lake now, but they had a dog. And when the temperature drops like it is now, down below zero, in the middle of the night, that lake makes all these noises. Their dog would start to howl.
Yeah.
Just for it
oh,
would,
wow.
It, so, and, you know, if you're out on the ice in the daytime, it makes noises too. But when it's cold like this, it really
sends
these shockwaves.
And Chris, like you, I lived on Lake Monona, and I'm telling you, I can recall many, many nights of being awakened with the house shaking in the wintertime with a pressure crack.
Yeah.
And yeah, indeed. Well, thank you for this book, and can I encourage you to do one of Lake Monona as well?
Well, I have a lot of collateral research on Lake Monona, and I'm thinking about putting all that together. I just need a little
That'd
break.
Be fun.
But a lot of people swam across the lake. It was a very popular thing to do.
On Mendota,
yeah,
and it's a long ways across.
It's a long ways across, and there are a lot of people who did it. There's a woman who swam across it in the 30s, and the newspaper reporter from Milwaukee, whose story got published over there, he doubted that a woman could have swum across the lake.
Chris, thanks a lot for calling.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And it's kind of you were talking about earlier, Don. You sort of take us around the lake.
Yeah, I start up in Westport where the river, Yahara River, enters the lake, and we go clockwise. I'm not sure why I went clockwise, but that's just the way I went. And we go clockwise around the lake, and I've set up each chapter. The first chapter of the book is just kind of I call it the view from space. Everything you need to know about Lake Mendota, especially if you've never been out there, and a little bit about the weather and how dangerous it can be at times. And then I have it broken up into chapters and that I think you can cover in a kayak or a canoe in about, you know, hour and a half.
Yeah.
And so, and you could start anywhere. You don't have to start in any particular place. It's, you just kind of join in progress somewhere and work your way around, and then you end up back at the same place, except on the last chapter, you go all the way up the river, up into Westport, an area that I call the entertainment and hospitality capital of Lake Mendota, all the way up into the bridge at where Highway 113 cuts off the lake up there. But you know, there were people who swam across the lake. Starting the first person I have any documentation of is the world's greatest architect, you know, Mr. Wright, who lived near North Livingston Street, and he claims that he swam from the foot of North Livingston Street over to Maple Bluff in the, you know, when he was a kid, and there have been lots and lots of people who've made that trip, but it's quite an accomplishment, and I have a story of one kid in the 60s, a guy named David Lewis, who swam from his family's house and on the west end of the lake to Governor's Island. And he said, well, I got there, and I wasn't all that tired, so I turned around and swam back. So he made, you know, he's the only one that I've encountered who's made the trip across, back and forth. Charlie Brand, the very famous lifeguard fisherman, he claims he swam all the way around the lake. But those are the only two that really made the long distance. But I have in the appendix at the back of the book, I have stories of a list of lake swimmers, people who made the crossing.
Well, I'd say, and the book, I've got to mention, there's so many hundreds of stories you've got in here, but also the photos, the old photos, and some of the diagrams. But I love all the photography. It really livens.
Well, you know, the photos in this book, there are a lot that I got from the State Historical Society, a lot that came from the university archives, but far and away, the majority of the photos that are in there are photos that no one's ever seen before because they came out of people's private collections, things that I found in dusty shoeboxes and family albums, and so many people that it may have taken me a long time to get to, but, you know, I was just so fortunate that people were so willing to share pictures with me because they just tell so much, you know, pictures worth a thousand words.
Oh, yeah.
And but they enlighten the book and they it's a personal connection. Like the picture on the cover.
Yeah.
That showed up on my doorstep in a grocery bag with a bunch of other newspaper clippings that this family had been cleaning and said, well, you know, we've got duplicates of all this stuff. Do you want any of this? I said, well, bring it over. And in that picture, in that bag, was this beautiful photo.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Don Sanford is author of On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota. Again, join in at 800-642-1234. We had Dot in Manitowoc up next. Dot, hi. Thanks
hi.
For calling.
Good morning. I would like to get back to the mere basic. How did Lake Mendota get its name? Is it an Indian name, or is it named after whatever? I would like to know the source of the name.
Sure.
Please?
Well, it's a sort of an Indian name. When the Ho-Chunk and their ancestors had names for these lakes, of course, and they were quite long, multi-syllable, and I wouldn't even try to pronounce them. And again, when the surveyors came through, they just gave them these temporary names for second, third, and fourth. And it wasn't until the 1870s when a real estate developer and later governor, Leonard Farwell, decided that the names, he was going to have better luck selling property on lakes that weren't called Fourth Lake or Third Lake. And he hired a surveyor, a guy, his name was Frank Hudson, to do some research and come up with these names. And Mendota has something to do with the gathering of waters, a place where waters meet. It's used in a couple of other Native American languages. Monona has another name that has something to do with fairies and elves and things like that. Wabisa is has something to do with a swan, or is that Kiganza? Anyway, so they're loosely based on Native American names, but they were not the names that Native Americans gave these lakes.
So the backstory was, the names helped sell property.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they all had, the names had a lot more cachet than First or Second Lake.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Dot, thanks a lot for calling. Dot Sanford, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chasseau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we have a lot of fun talking today with Don Sanford, author of On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota. Delightful book about the probably the most famous lake in Madison, for sure, and also it was the most researched lake in the world.
Yeah, well, Lake Mendota has the reputation of being the most studied lake in the world. And if you Google that phrase, you just go sit down at your computer, pound in most studied lake in the world, you will end up at the University of Wisconsin's Limnology Department, where they've been studying this lake since the 1800s. But as much as this lake has been studied scientifically, it's never really been studied from the social history of things until I started working on this book.
I have so many memories of the lake. Of course, I've spent so much time on the lake, but you do have some stories on this one. I was with a young lady, this was many years back, with a young lady who I really liked, and we were walking on along Picnic Point, and my first kiss with that young woman occurred on Lake Mendota on Picnic Point.
That is the most romantic spot on the lake, and we often tell people that it's the most romantic spot in the lake, probably the most romantic spot in the county, and that if you go out there with your favorite somebody and you walk out to the end of the point on a beautiful night, and you can't even get so much as a kiss out of that person, my suggestion is just push them into the lake and go back and try for somebody else. But, you know, so we've had this kind of this joke story for a long time, and then someone sent me an article that was in the San Francisco Examiner several years ago, and it listed the 10 best places to kiss in the world. The Pyramids, Eiffel Tower, Lake Louise, Tower Bridge, goes on and on and on. And here in the middle of this list is Lake Mendota, Picnic Point, Lake Mendota. And, you know, and this is a real newspaper. This is not the Onion. This is a real, genuine newspaper. And so, you know, Picnic Point, Lake Mendota made the top 10 in this list, mixed in with a lot of other great places to make out. And so the Picnic Point has a great reputation.
Well, it's well-deserved, and it is a very romantic. I mean, it is.
Yeah, and now, I mean, about 4 or 5 years ago, the university did a lot of work at the end of the point and cleared out a lot of invasive species there. And so now you can go to the end of the point and you can take in this just knockout view of the lake in the foreground and the beautiful state capitol building across the way.
It's spectacular. Yeah. Oh, man, it's spectacular. Kim in Madison said on Facebook that she lives on Lake Mendota, and here back to ice quakes for a minute here. Ice quakes have been significant this week. The entire house shakes, scares the dog. Something even fell off a shelf. Don't recall ice quakes this frequent or severe in the past.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the temperature. I think the folks like John Magnuson at the Limnology Department would tell you, or Steve Carpenter would tell you that this only happens when the temperature gets when it really drops. And it's, you know, I'm an ice boater, and we always talk about, you know, about September, we say, well, the lake is making ice. As soon as it drops about 3 degrees, oh, it's making ice. Well, right now, when it's this cold, it's really making ice. And I think we think that when it gets this cold, it probably makes maybe an inch of ice in a day. It could make that much ice. It's going crazy out there, and that's physics at work. You know, you get up close and personal connection with physics.
If you have an experience to share about Lake Mendota or another lake as well, what the heck, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We would certainly love to hear from you. And I bet, now you've got hundreds and hundreds of stories in this book.
Yes, many. All kinds of stories from all kinds of people some people I never even knew until one person I'm interviewing says, oh, you know, you really got to talk to so-and-so. He's lived on the lake or had experience. And I had a phone call yesterday from a woman who's lives in Boulder, Colorado, but she grew up here on the lake. And she had she said, you know, your book has triggered these memories about people and things that I, in my misspent youth, that I did that I'd forgotten about. But stories that were so moving, just incredible stories. And that, I think that's what happens if you grow up on a lake or any body of water.
Yeah.
You have that connection forever. We're like salmon.
And I think, you know, this actually, and I love Lake Mendota, and I've spent so much time on Lake Mendota, but you know what? As I was reading, it triggered memories. You don't have to have had any experiences with Lake Mendota to like this book. For one thing, the stories are really interesting, but for another, for me, it triggered stories about the Chippewa flowage and other lakes Black Lake in Wisconsin, where I spent so much time.
Yeah,
And that's half the fun for me.
Yes, and I grew up on Cazenovia Lake in New York State, and it's a much smaller lake than Mendota, but there's still things that happened there that I think about without much provocation.
Terry in Mineral Point, we turn to you next. Hi, Terry. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
You were talking about Picnic Point, so I thought I'd call and share a story that's not quite as dramatic as most of them you've probably heard. Back in 1980, I think it was, I was in law school, and my fiancé came out to Madison to, you know, spend some time there and all that. And I said, oh, great, I'll take her to Picnic Point, you know, and we got a picnic basket and fried chicken and all that kind of stuff and headed out there. And the mosquitoes were so bad, we didn't even get a third of the way before we fled.
Oh, so you never got the complete Picnic Point effect.
Well, that was pretty complete. As far as I was concerned, it completely made me not want to go there. So you probably won't put that story in your next book, but
well, you know, typically on Picnic Point, or often you're going to have a breeze.
Yeah,
on Picnic Point, and so mosquitoes, if you're along the shore line.
Yeah, but it's marshy. When you first go out on the point, there's some low spots there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if you've been more perseverant, you know, you might have gotten through that just big, and I've seen those big clouds of mosquitoes just waiting there to have lunch on you, and then you go a little further and way out at the end where it's higher ground, they're not quite as bad, but they're fierce early on.
Thanks a lot, Terry, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Daniel a chance to join in. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Don. I absolutely love your book. I wanted to let you know.
Well, thank you.
I got it for Christmas. It was my favorite present. I spent all Christmas Day reading it.
I hope you didn't keep you away from the table at dinner time.
No, not that bad. But I have a question about the McKenna Park Boathouse, which I think also is known as Shorewood Beach.
Right.
You mentioned it in the book, and there's a little brief bit about how I think there used to be a diving platform off of that area long ago. But I had heard a couple other rumors about the architect being, you know, a student of Frank Lloyd Wright's or something like that. Do you know anything about?
I don't know. I don't know who designed it. I know it was designed by the by the village, but I don't. I've read the stories about when it was opened up at first, but I don't recall who the architect was.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, most of the stories that I collected about it were how it was a a hangout place for young men from the West Side who were there to meet girls from Sherwood. And maybe go swimming.
I think it might still be that. At night a lot, and I can tell you, in the evenings, it's a popular spot.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate the call. Mary in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. One is, the last 2 days on the lake, we've heard almost like animal sounds, almost like whale songs.
Yeah.
And they've been beautiful and haunting and rather eerie. What is causing that?
It's ice thunder. It's the sound of the lake making ice. It's that ice that, you know, when the water freezes, it expands and everything is, it pushes on the existing ice and makes these low frequency sound waves.
Okay, because we had the explosions the other day, completely startled all of us and shook the house, but I hadn't remembered those low frequency sounds.
And if you're out on the ice, especially at night, it's
eerie.
Noisy, eerie,
yeah.
Eerie is
yeah.
It? Yeah.
And it's been doing it during the day even, and then the other thing is there's an open spot out there between Middleton and Shorewood.
Yes.
We have a telescope, and two guys in yellow suits are out there today also, and the geese were out there 2 days ago. I'm thinking, what in the world is causing that to stay open?
I looked at the lake on Sunday to see if we were ready to go ice boating there, and that's when I could see that lead of open water. And
uh-huh.
It's, I don't know what's going on out there. Somebody has told me that's often there, but it was a big stretch of open, and it's still open today.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was watching these men splashing around in it. I've had an airboat. I don't know if they're from the fire department doing something or if they're, I don't know. And they also left something out there, and they had it tethered to this airboat. I don't know what was going on, but I could see that it's open still. It's 2 days ago, there were geese there, but yes. Okay.
All right.
I don't know what's going on either.
and it could be.
It could be limnology could be out there doing, because I talked to a couple of those guys yesterday about this open space. So it could be some science going out there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for calling. Appreciate your call. Carol in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. Thank you, gentlemen, for this show. It's reminded me of some great stories from back in the 40s when I was about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would wake me early in the morning to go up to Lake Mendota to go perch fishing. And we'd rent a boat, go out in the boat, and he'd be busy the whole time either baiting my hook or taking a fish off because there were so many perch.
There was a long time that there was no limit. You could catch as many perch as you wanted.
Exactly. We would go home with a couple buckets full. Sometimes I even caught a perch by its fin. I didn't even need a hook.
There was a story. In fact, there's a picture in the first chapter of the book of this guy standing at the Hoover Boat Company landing, which is down in what's now James Madison Park, and he had this stringer of perch, and I don't know how the guy could hold his arm out. There were so many fish on that stringer, and they were just fantastic fishing.
I can verify that for sure. It just seems kind of like yesterday. So thank you very much.
And do you remember cleaning them all?
I remember watching my dad clean them all. But they were delicious, and so is this show. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, you get pretty good at cleaning fish when you get a batch like that.
Yeah, or white bass.
Yeah.
Perch
are nice fish to clean, too, so they fillet really nicely. So, and they taste, as you know, they're very tasty.
Oh, gosh, yes.
John in Dubuque, Iowa, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I might have an idea who designed the lake house at Shorewood.
Oh, okay, yeah.
My wife's grandfather was J.J. Fladd, the architect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He lived in Shorewood. And she had two uncles that were also architects that lived right on that lake. So it might have been possibly one of them three.
It's possible because they were Sherwood people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably a pretty good guess.
I'll have to dig around for that.
Thanks, Don.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Let's go to Dennis in Beloit, who's got an important question. Hi, Dennis.
Yes. I really enjoy the interview, and I'm a reader, and I tried to buy the book just 10 minutes ago on Amazon, and that isn't the place to look for the book. How do I?
It's there.
It's there, but I saw it listed at $36, so I must have done something wrong.
No, that's it's. Well, without going into a huge commercial plug here, but you can buy it at Amazon. It's the cover price is $35, but the way Amazon sets up their shipping, this is a big book and it's very heavy. I was losing about a dollar on every book I sold when I had it priced at the cover price because they set their shipping up at a fixed rate. So I just raised the price by a dollar, and the shipping comes out the same, and it's the same as if you can also buy it from my website. LakeMendotaHistory.com.
I'll place an order. Just one quick question.
Yeah.
I'm curious, was there any mention about the years ago, I don't know, 30 years ago, the Statue of Liberty out on...
oh, yeah, there's a photo.
There's a great photo of the Statue of Liberty sticking your head up through the ice with a bunch of ice boats in front of it.
Yeah, I worked in the union for a while some years ago, and I have good recollection of that. And that was really unique.
Yeah, so, yes.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay,
thanks so much. I think you're in that picture.
As a matter of fact, I am. And that, you know, that was a picture we took after a day of ice boating, just kind of on a whim. Oh, let's go over there and see what this thing is. We'd heard about it, and who knew that I was going to, you know, 30, 40 years later, I was going to use that as a picture in a book. But it was just a... I don't even know who took the picture. I had my camera with me, and we set our ice boats up, and I grabbed somebody and said, hey, take our picture, would you?
And that was one of the great pranks?
Yeah, I think you put it up there. Yeah, yeah, that was a great prank.
Oh, that had to be one of the great ones.
And if you
saw that. I was so happy to have had that
Yes,
experience.
And I used that for a story that I wrote on our at iceboat.org called Downwind to the Frozen Apple, about how we sailed across the glacier to New York City one year.
Mary in Colfax, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was a student at the university in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And another gal and I wanted to take another sailing lesson down there at the student center. And so we went down to look for an instructor. And a young man said that he was an instructor. And as it turned out, he wasn't. But the three of us went out in one of those little tech dinghies. And none of us knew how to sail very well. And we ended up going past that imaginary line between Picnic Point and the Lorraine Hotel.
Maple Bluff. Picnic Point and Maple Bluff,
I think,
or Tenney Park, one of those lines, yeah.
Yeah, they tell you never to go back, never to go beyond that, because the lake's too windy. Well, we ended up out there. And we were having a tough time, and the boat was leaning and filling up with water, and it was leaning the other way and filling up with water. And it was, you know, it's about the size of a rowboat.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So just about the time we thought, this is it, we hear a deep voice coming out of the sky, and it says, take down your sail. And we turned around, and there was the Lake Mendota rescue boat.
Harvey.
And we were really glad to see them.
Yeah, you and a lot of other people.
Yeah.
See, you had a good experience there because you cheated death on Lake Mendota. But it's they're always watching when the university boathouse is open. The life saving service is always there, watching for people just like you and a lot of other people. It's an amazing service. I think it's the only one of its kind in the country.
And you talk about it in your book, of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for that story, Mary. Appreciate it. I want to give Bill a chance to join in with an experience as well. Bill from Bloomer, thanks for calling.
I worked on Lake Mendota for Carl Bernard from 1957 to 1960. I did boat repair, and Carl was probably one of the most knowledgeable persons about the boat, about the lake. His father originally owned what was the Hoover Boatyard.
Right, his father and grandfather.
His grandson, yes. And he was a great ice boater.
Yes, very famous ice boater.
And I'm building a boat, a 41-foot schooner in my backyard, and I'm going to name the boat after Carl Bernard.
Wow.
Carl B.
Wow. Yes. So, yes.
Great story.
That's a great story, Bill. It's that was quite a place, the University Boathouse.
And just the sailing, there's always a story about the Hoofers having one of the largest sailing fleets in the world.
Oh yeah, I think Annapolis, the sailing club at Annapolis is bigger, but the University of Wisconsin Hoofer Sailing Club has the second largest fleet of sailboats of that kind of a club in the country.
Oh, and Bill, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Well. We haven't covered so many things. I mean, you cover the dozens of Indian mounds that dot the lake's shoreline.
Right. There are all kinds of, there are a lot, you can see a couple of them from the lake, but there's so many places where the Ho-Chunk and all their ancestors, is the generic term I use for this, had settlements or campsites, built Indian mounds, including the largest one in the state, over there at Mendota Mental Health Institute. There's an awful lot of prehistory going on here.
Yeah, I love it. And a couple of presidents have spent time
yes,
on it.
Yes, Grover Cleveland. Grover Cleveland actually was on the lake. Harry Truman came here to dedicate the headquarters of CUNA. JFK reportedly stayed in a house that was on the lake. Down by at the foot of Brearley Street, and Obama was here for a party before he became president. And I think George W. Bush was here also at a house on the north shore of the lake for a party while he was campaigning.
Well, you have, Don, I hope the book is doing well.
It is. It is. It's just going gangbusters.
Well, I tell you what, it is a lot of fun. And I so much appreciate you coming by and spending time with us today. It's just been wonderful.
Well, it's been fun talking to all your listeners, Larry, and I'm just appreciate you inviting me.
Great to have you here. Don Sanford is the author of the book On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota. And I'm telling you, it's filled with wonderful photos, and he's a good writer, very good writer. And all these stories about the people and the places on the lake are just unbelievable. And even if you're not familiar with the lake, I think you're going to enjoy it, because if you spend any time at all on the water anywhere, these stories are going to remind you
yes.
of your own experiences on the water. So, Don, again, thanks
well,
so
thanks
much.
Well, thanks an awful lot, Larry. It's been fun.
Been a lot of fun. And we're going to continue to talk about the water as well, and maybe Mendota, which certainly a little bit about Mendota, but about lakes all across Wisconsin. Talk ice fishing with Gary Engberg coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.